Hi, I'm Sharon Sneer. You're listening to Grief's Gift, a podcast that explores stories of loss and grief, and how and where to find within these painful times some of life's most beautiful gifts. We all have the freedom to make choices out of the losses we experience. Courageous, creative, collaborative, and conscious choices that so often become the gifts we hold most dear. So welcome to the conversations, meditations, and connections that are grief's gift. Welcome back. This is episode 2 of Micaiah Revelle's story. I hope you were able to hear the small story that I shared called The Eldest Son between episode 1 and now. That story really does give you a sense of all that Micaiah went through and possibly a stronger understanding of what he has achieved. We return to Micaiah's story where we left off. He was telling us a little bit about the treatment he received in the foster homes, which in his words was horrible. He's very careful to explain that this was his experience and not a general experience of everyone that goes into a foster home. So please take note, this is specifically Micaiah's experience. The beginning of your social change, because you are a social change individual, and that was the beginning of you stepping forward into the purpose of your life, really, wasn't it?
Yes, yes. It began by Mary recommending a constitution and then me focusing on that and advocating. So it was a very, it was a paradigm shift in my life and the lives of others who were living there. And it was a lot of children from all over the world.
Absolutely.
And those who had a family here in the U.S., they were sent to their family. And those of us, like myself, who didn't have any contact here in the United States, we were sent to the foster care system.
And how was that for you?
The foster system, every time I discuss about this publicly, I always, make sure that I'm mindful of what I'm saying. My experience at the foster system was horrible. It was abusive, corruption, and a neglect. That was my experience. But I'm also aware that other people might have a positive experience.
Mm-hmm.
What I saw was corruption in the sense that the government is providing funding, but not every dollar is going to the children in the foster care system.
Right.
And neglect in the sense that, it is more likely to turn out but to go to prison or end up dead or end up not being in college when you are a foster care child, because nobody really give nobody really care about you, because all they seeing is the baggages you're carrying, that you are pathetic, you are helpless, and that nobody will come for you. That was my experience at the foster care system. I went to 2 different foster care system in Philadelphia. It was not good at all.
It was what?
It was not good at all.
Mm-hmm.
It was negative experiences.
And how did you meet Elizabeth?
When I aged out of foster care system, I was sent to York, Pennsylvania, in another group home. This was in 2005, and I received a phone call one day. It was at 3 o'clock in the morning on March 5th, 2005, that Mary had passed away by a natural cause.
Oh.
Mary was the foundation of my existence. Mary was my, you know, conscience. Losing her was very difficult for me.
Yes.
I didn't want to live anymore. I became a suicidal. I stopped eating. And one of the social workers who work in this facility saw what was happening to me. And she decided to call a local psychologist. And this was a Dr. Elizabeth Rivell. Because by that time, Dr. Rivell was providing a pro bono psychotherapy to the immigrants and the refugees and asylum seekers who were living in this facility.
Mm-hmm.
So I became her pro bono patient. That's how we met.
Yeah. So even in the untimely death of your mother, she was already working towards helping you become the man you were destined to become, because she knew that the way you would respond would require other help. At least that's how I see it. One thing leads to another.
Yes. She saw something in me that I didn't even see in myself, and that those around me, all the places I've been, didn't see in me. But she decided to get involved, and but she really, really, really helped me. And the way she described it, if you ask her, she often said that she felt like Mary asked her to take care of me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think that's exactly what I mean. I think on some deep spiritual level, Mary asked Elizabeth to take care of you.
Yes.
And so how did she do that?
But she provided safe space, and but she made sure that I understand death and the dying. She worked on me on kind of explaining that it's okay to die and it's okay to live. Mary is in a better place. And now I have to live for Mary.
Hmm.
But she provided education. But she asked what I wanted to do, in my life. And I went through a list of the things I wanted to do, and she held my hand, and she said that she will always be there with me while I'm working on my goals in life, no matter what.
Was that...
And that...
Go on.
That's how we started the process of our journey. And then later on, she asked me if my father, Dr. Alvin Rivell, suggested that maybe I should be adopted. So I could be the legal son, because that way, some things might be easier for me, as far as living in the United States and then pursuing my goals.
Mm-hmm.
And but they asked me to get there, and I agree, and that's how I was able to be adopted.
Yes. And throughout that time, since you've been adopted, you have also experienced and succeeded in a wonderful education.
Yes.
So can you tell us a little bit about what that education has led you to become? Tell me a little bit about you and, of course, the foundation that you have created?
Growing up, both my parents were college educated, and we went to very, you know, strong school. So I do have a very strong early childhood education. But my father always used to tell me, my biological father used to say that I should be a mechanic. I didn't want to be mechanic, but he was pushing me to be mechanic. So that's how I was learning how to drive, and with that end up changing my life. So when I was adopted, I wanted to be a doctor originally.
Mm-hmm.
Parents say that my adoptive parents say that they'll provide the fund for me to go to school, but I have to make sure that I am a disciplined and consistent in the school work. And at the high school, I became a valedictorian, and I went to college studying international relations. And when my mom took me to California, when we came back, and that's when I told her that I want to go to grad school. And I went to grad school. He was a doctor from Pakistan who told me that I told him, "Hey, I want to be a doctor one day. Do you have any advice for me?" And he said that if you become a medical doctor, you can only help one person at a time. But if you become a human rights defender of studying peace, you can help many lives at once. Sometimes the people, because I say you talk, for you speaking to the people, you can heal a lot of people that way. And I would strongly suggest for you, study peace and then be a human rights, advocate in this world.
And so you've become a human rights advocate, and you indeed have spoken to many, many people, including many famous people. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. I have spoken at with the Hillary Clinton campaign and the former president of Liberia, and I was in a policy writing a team during Susan Rice, she was visiting at my school. I was among the people, students who were chosen to write the policies for her.
Hi, this is Sharon Sneer, and you're listening to Grief's Gift. If you resonate with what you're hearing, please don't forget to let your friends and family know. And if you have your own experience that you would like to share, please contact me on www.sharonsneer.com or on my email, sharon@sharonsneer.com. Thank you so much for listening to Grief's Gift. And Makaya, you have a master's degree in what?
Yes, I do have a master's degree in international peace and conflict resolution from American University, Washington, D.C.
And tell me about what you're doing now.
In 2012, we created the Mary Mambo Makaya Foundation, which is where we have the orphanage in the Congo. Since then, it has been 10 years. Recently, we just celebrated our 10-year anniversary.
Congratulations. Congratulations. That's really fantastic.
Thank you. Yeah. And from then, from 10 years ago, we have assisted over 7,000 orphans in the Congo. fire, giving out their school supplies, giving out food, giving medicine, during in a time of COVID-19 pandemic. So we are kind of a hands-on organization when it comes to helping orphans of war in the Democratic Republic of Congo. So that has taken a lot of my time and the focus. But now, last year, I decided to create another company called the Peace Promise Consulting. So our job is, going to the institutions such as the schools or companies, big or small, and do the peace mediation between employees and employers, but trying to create a more peaceful environment in the workforce.
Beautiful. And are you doing that with other people? Have you got people working within that organization you've created?
Yes. Well, we have, I have five associates who are working with me on this company. And recently, we just finished up the contracts where we had with the Center for School for Community. It is part of the education department here in Pennsylvania. And we are an international business. So it's called Peace Promise Consulting, and peacepromiseconsulting.com is the website.
Thank you. I'll put that up after we've finished. I'll put that up on our podcast. Just to go back for a moment to the orphanage, these children that you work with, these orphans, I assume they are orphans that have come out of the Civil War where both parents were killed. Is that right?
Correct. These children are from the eastern part of the country in Congo. That's where most of the factions, the rebels, reside. But the reason being is because in these areas, that's where the minerals are. So it is a hot spot when it comes to the conflict. So but the children are from this region, and both the parents have been killed from a violence. And this is our standard. But we only bring them there, for the children who are lost, but who lost both the parents due to violence of a conflict. So that's where the children are from. We received them since when they were infant, and now they are 3 years old. So but there are four kids, four babies are living with us now. And where they grow, they are growing up really fast, and but they just celebrate for a three years
last year. Wow. You know, a lot of people that I speak to really don't know very much about the war in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and they have no idea who's fighting whom, and definitely not how many people have died. So just to posit this in some information for my listeners, can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yes. The conflict in the Congo, just a brief history, it really took place in 1994 when the genocide happened in Rwanda, where you had Hutus between Tutsis were killing each other. Mostly Tutsis were being killed. But they fled to Congo. Congo opened its border because we share a border with Rwanda. So many refugees and those who fleeing violence from Rwanda came to Congo. And that's include the bad people also came to Congo at the same time. So, but the guy, a leader of the rebel group named Kabila, took advantage of this population and they recruited him to his mission, his violence group, to go overthrow Mobutu. So when that happened, and eight different countries also sent the troops to Congo. So Congo was not a safe place to be as a human being at that time, because all these foreigners came in, the soldiers, they couldn't speak our language, but they couldn't understand us. And a lot of innocent people were killed simply for misunderstanding each other. Women were raped daily. Dozens of women were being raped daily. But the UN called Congo the rape capital of the world.
Yes.
Because the rape was so bad in a country. And then out of those who were killed, 47% of them were children under the age of 5. This is according to UNICEF. So Congo, really bad place to be. So even though the war really kind of cooled down now, but the factions, the terrorist groups are still there terrorizing our villages. And this is for the people who disagree with our government, and but they were able to have our weapons and went to terrorize village. And for the government are fighting them, but, you know, I don't think this is going to end anytime soon.
And how many people have been killed, Makaya?
It has been over 5 million people since then. And over 2 million have, displaced, both, you know, internally and externally.
Well, the world has a lot to learn and a lot to, you know, the Congo, because you have definitely gone through the most terrible, terrible few decades.
Yeah, and, the real cause of the war is a mineral.
That's right.
Where you have the multinational corporations coming in, you know, kind of empowering these rebel groups so they can provide the minerals for them. So we here in the West or around the world, we can have the technology devices in our hands. A lot of these materials where they're using to make these things are coming from places like Congo. So they cannot get it through fair trade, but they're using violence to get these minerals.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I say the world has a lot to lot to pay for what they're doing, because the minerals are the cause of the rebels getting paid a lot of money in order to get the minerals for different countries. Isn't that right?
Yes. Yeah, that's correct. And, you know, but the saddest thing for me, you know, as a human rights advocate, what I'm seeing is that the global community and Congolese people became like a conflict fatigue. And it's still happening, but nobody's talking about it. Not many people are talking about it, and there's nothing they can do. I'm afraid that the same thing is happening in Ukraine. So but the violence is so dire, and we are becoming it become a normal, so but we no longer, it's no longer urgent, but we become a kind of violence or conflict fatigue, but that doesn't mean it's done. It's still happening. You know, people are still fleeing. People are still dying. Suffering is still there. So that's why you hear that a lot of people are not talking about Congo anymore, you know, but which is where we had the most deadliest conflict since World War II.
That's right.
But, you know, it's not in the news anymore because we became fatigued of talking about violence.
Exactly, which is just so tragic. And one of the reasons why I wanted to speak to you to inform people about what they simply don't hear about. And what do you suggest people can do in their own lives to make a difference and, for one thing, not succumb to the violence fatigue that the world is allowing? So they hear it and then they go out and have their cup of coffee and they forget about it. What would you recommend people do?
Many things. One of them is to know. People have to know what is going on. But the world become a small village because the technology capacity. And another thing I would suggest is that, study by the lawmakers of your country, and they're writing the letters about the mineral conflict in the Congo, for example. If they can introduce beer and lawmakers will have enough power to do something. But that's one of the things that you can do, kind of burning anything coming from violence, like blood diamonds, blood oil, kind of advocate against that kind of practices. Because if you advocate that, less people will be killed because of the minerals.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing is that, get involved with the civil society, but those who are working, but to make the lives of the native, lives of the local people better, especially those who were affected because of the violence. One of them is the Mary Mambo Makaya Foundation. What we do, we are helping orphans who were affected by this conflict. Having a studies as an orphan in the Congo, which is the country is already self-states, the country is already struggling, and not having a parent, meaning that your chance to succeed in life is slim.
Mm.
Because, you will not be educated as a normal people who will be educated. Not to say orphans are not normal, but it is a taboo. I mean, when you have put a big bag hanging on your back, if you are orphans, you will be often overlooked. So for us, we're providing a little bit with the books, the uniform, the food, but to send these kids to school, and sometimes cooperating with the public school, make sure that these orphans are educated. So that's the philosophy of the Mary Mambo Makaya Foundation. We are a very small organization, but 99% of our fund goes directly in the service of the children.
Yes. And your brothers work for the foundation, Makaya?
My brother works with foundation. Both of them, two of my brothers works for the foundation as we speak. And we have a very trustworthy people also in the organization in the Congo. Yes, brother works for the foundation.
So I also want to honor your brothers who went through an incredibly difficult time when Mary died, and also came out the other end and have become huge social advocates for change and caring within the organization you've created. So I just want to honor them, Karin and Trezor and
Miguel.
That's right. Exactly. So thank you so much for all of that. Is there anything else, Makaya, that we need to speak about before we finish this wonderful conversation?
And I want to thank you and your wonderful family because my brother is enrolled in the med school. Is that because of your support? Is it because of your compassion, love, and the kindness? That's why he was able to do that. But he stopped because he wanted to focus on the foundation first, and then he's going to resume his education. So your family has been consistently great to my family.
Yes.
My family here in the United States and my family in the Congo. So we are grateful for you and your family.
Oh, Makaya. You know, it's such a tiny little bit compared to what you and your family have done. So, you know, it was an honor to just be there with you and to do a tiny little bit to help. I would love to talk to you again. I feel as if there's more to discuss. There's more to discuss about what the differences we can do to make this world a better place. Not only what you've said, but on a personal and interpersonal level. And I know you know a great deal about that. So would it be possible another time to have another conversation?
Absolutely, yes.
That would be great. Okay. So please give my love to Elizabeth. And thank you so much for taking my call and sharing your incredible life where enormous loss has turned you into somebody that is making a profound difference to the world every day. I really appreciate you and what you do.
Thank you very much. And thank you for interviewing me.
Thank you so much, Makaya.